Hey everyone, this episode is with Joss Lowden. She's a British writer on Uno X and current women's hour record holder. Joss is one of the most well-spoken and charismatic people I've recorded a podcast with, so I hope you love this one, and hopefully we'll record more in the future. We spoke about how she was training during her pregnancy, her background, getting into the sport much later than most, her training for the hour record and Worlds time trial, and all kinds of other nerdy training cycling stuff. We also spoke about my book a bit in this episode, and Joss has left one of the nicest reviews for it. So if you want to get that or get more content like this, go to howtobecomeaprocyclist.com. If you're new to the show, there's no ads. The point of these podcasts are to provide free information about cycling and training from the best riders and coaches in the world. They're just for fun, and so I can ask the questions I want answers to. But if you enjoy it, I hope you leave a review because it really does help the episodes reach more people. Other than that, enjoy hearing from Joss. Awesome. But so you're in Andorra right now.
Yeah. Yeah. For the rare few days that I actually get to be at home. It's really nice.
Yeah. Are you away a lot now with racing?
Yeah. I think we didn't help ourselves really because we went to Spain for most of the winter. So I left Andorra beginning of December and went to the UK for a month. And then it was team camps in January and then into racing in Spain. And then we came back for 3 days and then went to Argentina. And so, yeah, we didn't really help ourselves. But it is nice to have a bit of time here, for sure.
What is your house like right now? Between you and Dan, both pro cyclists, now you have a new Theo. You have a young boy now.
We have a Theo.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty busy, to be honest. Dan is the busiest person in the world. I don't really know how he does it, to be honest. And it's been a bit of a madhouse in the last few days as well, because we've had one of his mates, Johnny's been staying. We've had a videographer doing some filming for some sponsorship stuff. And then it's obviously here, and we've got a babysitter that comes and tells us to be pretty nuts.
I like hearing your side of it, because when I asked him the same question, I think his answer was something along the lines of, oh yeah, we got the spreatsheet, so we organize when Joss does her training.
We do have to have little meetings about how we're going to structure the day and who's doing hours at what time. And it's worse for him because I just have to ride my bike, whereas he has to ride his bike and then also do a full-time job as well. So his brain is very full. I can tell though his brain is really full because I've talked to him and I'm there's nothing going in at all. I have to schedule time to make him listen.
Interesting. What's it like being a mom now? How has that changed things for being a cyclist?
You realize you spend a lot of time sitting around. Life is really easy when you don't have a kid. And you finish training and the rest time. Because I can remember when I went full time professional and stopped working, I didn't really want to do it because I was I don't know what do you do with your time? I used to being really, really busy into cramming everything into a day. And I suppose, yeah, a bit like what Dan used to do, work aloud and you just maximize time as much as everywhere. And then suddenly you've got all this time to rest and now I definitely don't. Now I do squats holding Theo for a weight. partly to entertain him and just to get in gym time.
I can imagine the busy part of it, but now you have a much more important job than being a cyclist. Does it not bring a little bit more balance in your life and does it make it more relaxing to be a cyclist where it's okay, this is not the most important, maybe it was never the most important thing in the world to you?
No, absolutely. I think it's definitely a way of putting life into perspective because, yeah, family time is really, really important. I just had this trip out to Argentina, which was for a wedding, a family wedding. And everybody goes bad wanting to be with Theo and wanting all of our time to be all together, and we've got training to do and everything, and I could get really stressed about it, about trying to cram it all in. And sometimes I do get stressed about trying to get it all in, and then you're absolutely right, your family time and bringing up this little human is ultimately the most important thing. But then at the same time, on the flip side, it makes you also realize what you really, really enjoy doing for yourself. Because since, like, when I started training again after having Theo, I think I had months and months and months where there wasn't a single minute of a single training session where I didn't, like, love it. Because it was, like, the relief and the satisfaction to be doing it was just really nice. Once you kind of get over the, like, this kind of like anxiety of like, oh my God, I've left my baby, they're going to die. And you realize they're not. Then it's just really, really nice to be like on your bike and to train and to feel set, like feel good. And every single session was like, I was getting better and better as well. So you're like wins every day. So that was really good. And admittedly, all of that like stops. And now I'm just tired and it feels like, it feels rubbish, but it was really rewarding. So I think there's like, the puts in perspective, like, what are the important things in life, like your baby and family, but at the same time, makes you really realize that what you do for your job is actually also something that you really love. So kind of being positive on both sides.
Sure, but you trained right through your pregnancy, no? Like, weren't you training quite a lot
while you were, like, and I was looking at these, like, Dan pulled up some pictures yesterday and, like, a video of me, and it's literally... It's 2 days before he was due. Oh, not due. The 2 days before he came on 30th of June, and this is the 28th of June. And I'm doing like, I did this session, which was like 3 by 1 minute, 3 by 40 seconds, 3 by 20 seconds. And it's full gas. And I'm like this whale, like sprinting uphill. And I actually had like some of my best numbers of pregnancy, like right at the very end. I think it was weird. Like I wouldn't say I trained the whole way through, because a lot of the time, if you're just riding your bike, it doesn't necessarily mean you're training. You know what I mean? Like, I could look at it and go, oh, are you in training still like 10, 15 hours a week or something? But like half the time, yeah, you ride to a cafe, you have a coffee, you can whatever, and ride home. Like, is it training? Like, I'm not really sure. But I did go to the gym a lot, and I did still do turbo intervals. So maybe it's training. But I like training.
Yeah, fantastic. But did anyone ever give you any sort of guidelines on if that's okay? Like, obviously I'm not asking for myself here, but like,
So my coach is really good. And there's another coach on the team, Len, who coached Eleanor Barker, so my teammate who went through her pregnancy. So basically, like, I got pregnant, I called my coach, Yella, and was like, I'm pregnant. And we're kind of like, well, want to keep training, want to stay fit. He was like, I don't know anything about pregnancy. I was like, I don't know. But like, let's research it. Let's see what we can learn together. I want to like carry on doing the things I enjoy doing. Let's see what kind of information we can find out there. And actually, there really actually isn't very much at all. And it's sort of evolving all the time, because for quite a long time, the information was like, don't take your heart rate above like 150 or 140 BPM and don't do more than like 1 hour and one go. And but then we listened to like a lot of like podcasts and stuff from like endurance cyclists, or not cyclists, like runners and skiers, and we got slightly different like perspective on it. And we decided kind of to just kind of go with our own sort of feel, take the information that was out there and so adapt it. So I think by the time I was training, they sort of said like, you take like the new ceiling on your maximum heart rate of like 90%, I think it was, of your maximum, which is really actually quite arbitrary, because your maximum changes all the time, really, and we don't know what happens to your maximum heart rate when you're pregnant anyway. It was a bit arbitrary. And we were kind of like, well, let's train to that. I kind of like trained to feeling, and we started kind of collecting kind of data as we went through. So I was doing lactate testing the whole way through pregnancy, both at altitude and sea level, to see what kind of happens. Which then, yeah, it was kind of pretty, it's just kind of like an interesting focus to have. And now I'm working with a researcher, this woman, Margie Davenport from University in Canada. She's like the lead researcher in athletes and pregnancy. And she's sort of going to use a lot of my data and going to write a paper about it, because it's just kind of more data and more information than there's kind of been before. So hopefully it will help people realize what they can actually do.
That's really interesting. So the only real like threshold or like limitation you gave yourself was this 90% of your max heart rate thing. Other than that, it was like you just carried on normally, like just go by how you feel.
feeling was much more of it. The 90%, like, I was like, basically,
if that's, you know, really hard. That's like, no, that's not easy.
For a normal person, it's hard. But for like, that's...
What's 90% of your max heart rate? That's like, that's not a cruise. That's...
So my max is like 195. So I went for like 178, 179, which I know isn't 90%, but it's like, give or take. And then, but that I'm comfortable at. That's like threshold, okay? Like,
yeah, you're doing threshold that efforts 2 days before you give birth to a child. Okay.
Well, they were. They were like, they were, but so, yeah, so there was, we trained in a different way. I trained in a different way. So like, the kind of like, you put in like rules, and I know you like rules with your training. So you have these rules, and my rules are like after an effort, this is going to sound really stupid, but like you absolutely, you know, when you go really, really hard and then you like, you can't pedal and you like fall off, that is not acceptable when you're pregnant. Like you have to be able to send oxygen like all the way around your body. And if you can't send it to like your legs, then maybe it's not great for the baby. This is, yeah. But your body ultimately will always prioritize like the baby first. It's the same with like your energy and like availability. Like, yeah, it will keep this little like life alive. They're really self-sufficient. They'll take from you what it wants long before it gives it to you. But so as long as you, so basically, after all efforts, got to keep pedaling. I've got to feel like really in control, and I've got to always feel like I can do loads more. So it was the same when I'd go out like on an endurance ride. Like I had to feel like there's still plenty in the tank. And then that was okay. So that was like way of sort of keeping a lid on it. Because you know what it's like when you're doing an effort and it becomes like the most important thing in the world to get to the end. and then that's tricky because sometimes I'd be looking at my heart rate going up and up and up, and I'd be like, oh God, I'm literally hitting. It's like the rev limiter. And you're like, oh no, I need to finish before I hit that limit. And so, yeah, you need rules, definitely.
I love hearing that because, yeah, I do love my rules from all my ridiculous stories and stuff, but it's helpful.
I can't remember when it was. I was listening to the chapter where you were talking about like this method of training, and it was, I can't remember the... I think he was a skier.
Speed skater, Niels van der Poel.
Niels van der Poel. And his methods and like the rules that you set yourself around that, and like the amount of time that you had to spend, and you had like your heart rate limit. And I was like, these rules, like you think that they're controlling you, but actually they're still nuts.
Yeah. Well, okay. But that, okay. So the context for that, like it was... I wanted to come, like, it was a cool new training idea, right? Like, if you come up with a new idea, like, you'll push yourself more, so much harder if it's like, ah, this is the thing. Or it's just like, it's new, it's cool. And so I wanted to turn that training plan into like a game. Like, that, I just, those rules were the only thing I made for like, okay, I'm going altitude for a few weeks here. This is my training plan. I just got to stay within these rules, and I'm just going to spend as much time in this heart rate zone as I can. And then those are the only rules. And that, yeah, it worked in the end, kind of.
Your training though experiment. Was absolutely nuts. Oh my God. I just can't get over it. Like, I really feel that anyone that thinks that they train hard should like listen to your book and then be like, oh, I don't train hard.
That's the nicest compliment to get from you. I really appreciate that. The funny thing is, it's like, I think that like the voice in my head ever since I was a kid was always thinking that like the pros that were in Europe and or in California was like, when I was going to school and stuff like that, we're doing more. And that was the thing where I was just like, oh, there's somebody getting up at 4 a.m. right now. And that was like, always the thing pushing me to do it.
Well, I would think was just like, when did you sleep? Like,
I did not sleep in university.
You trained all day and then you got up in the middle of the night and went trained in the middle of the night as well.
I mean, that's the thing. Like when, okay, I was doing that in university and stuff because like the way it started was I had classes during the day, and so then I'd go training during the night. And then when I dropped out of university, I was worried like, oh, don't be lazy now. Like, don't go sleeping in. Like, now you got to train in the time that you're going to school. And that's where like the 40, 45 hour training weeks came from, because I was like, well, I got to make the most of this now. Like, now I'm a full-time pro. And the nice thing about that though is like between the age of like 18 to, I don't know, 22, 23, like your hormones are never going to be higher. Like you can run into the wall as many times as you want and recover like real quick. So you can do crazy things. But no, that definitely was not the best ideas. I drank way too much coffee in those years.
It was also the sessions that you were doing literally up and down Main Road. Like, but actually, I kind of get that because, like, so during COVID, like, when it was like proper lockdown in the UK, it was like an absolute, like, I'm not saying that COVID was a good thing at all, but riding on the road in the UK was like amazing because they were empty and the A roads are really, really fast. And so you could go out and you go up the, like, you know, you could did 4 or 5 hour ride and you could go from where we were living in England and you go right into Wales and could just go absolutely miles. And I know that some people think that you shouldn't have done that during COVID, but like, it's on the big main roads, it's so fast. And so I'm so my family take the piss because whenever I'm like, oh, I had such a nice ride, and they're like a bit of a road bashing, I'm like, it's fine. I get it.
Absolutely. I'm in the same boat because the part of, like, I was in Austria during that and with one of my Kiwi teammates, like, we were just living in a barn in the mountains during COVID, and it was like the most fun summer ever. Because we're living in paradise. We never got locked down and there's no tourists. Like, all the roads are empty now and you have all these beautiful roads to go exploring, yeah. And there's nobody there. It was the best.
Yeah. I used to go to Wales like most days because we lived like, I wasn't very far, like maybe 60K from the Welsh border at the time. And I would go across just because then it would say like Araf on the roads instead of slow. And I'd be like, yeah, I've been somewhere. We found that we had pretty good riding during lockdown.
It's also funny just in like in the months after when everything started to ease up and the stories of what some of the cyclists were doing to get around it started to get out. Like, I know I had one teammate, a really good friend of mine, was living in Tyrol, which was a different part of Austria that was locked down. And his whole strategy was you were allowed to go out with the bike to go get your groceries. So he went on like all his training rides with a big backpack on to say like, oh, he's going to get his groceries like 100 kilometers away.
Yeah, there's this really nice store like 6 hours away that I can't get to.
They got the best produce, the best tomatoes like 200 kilometers away.
Once it like eased up a little bit, Dan and I did a bit of bike packing. So it was like when you could stay places, but it was still like people didn't really go anywhere. Except when we did it, we'd go bike packing, but Dan would go on his TT bike and I'd go on my road bike because that way...
sounds fair.
Yeah, well, it was because if we were on our road bikes together, we couldn't like really sit next to each other that well because he would be riding a bit too hard, but I couldn't sit on his wheel either because it'd be too easy. So instead he went TT bike and I would sit on his wheel on my road bike. So it was like motor pacing, but we put our frame bags on. We were basically like motor pacing with bike packing and we'd go like 40 kilometers an hour. So you just travel crazy fast. It was like... the best way to get around.
That is really fun. I think that was, yeah, it was interesting for a lot of cyclists, the COVID lockdowns, all the crazy things people did. But so going back to something you said earlier, as far as you thought you'd always be bored being a cyclist. And what I found is like when I finally started to like ease back the training hours to more like, 10 to 12 hours over like the last year. And so what I noticed is my brain works so much better. You spend your whole life as an athlete being tired and hungry. And like, I feel like I just got 20% smarter just because I wasn't so tired. Like when I'd have to work on the computer, I could actually focus and my brain was working. I'm like, wow, this is amazing. Do you find like, now I look at it when I go for like a really big, or if I have a couple big days in a row, like I start training really hard for a bit and then I try to work on the computer for a bit. I'm like, I just feel really dumb right now. Like, no, I can't think.
Really, really dumb. I'm really, really sensitive. My brain is very sensitive to like fatigue. I become like a complete idiot when I'm tired. I'm learning Spanish. We've been in Andorra for just over 2 years. And although it's like Catalan is the main language, I learn Spanish and I do it every single day. And I can, some days, I would say close to speak pretty good Spanish. Other days, generally couldn't order a coffee. And it's completely based on like how tired I am and how much training or how much sleep I've got. After like big training block, I just can't do anything. So I can understand why you do. You sit there in the afternoon and they see cyclists just like, you know, scrolling their phones because you're just too tired to do anything. So yeah.
It's real.
It's real. Yeah. And
but
have you heard of like Wordle?
Wordle.
Wordle.
No, what's that?
It's this like word game. And so like every day, there's like one word every day and it's like a 5-letter word and you've got like 6 goes to guess it. So you put in like a guess. So let's say you guess like slide And then it gives you like the letters which are like correct. And so like yellow is like correct but in the wrong place, and green is correct and in the right place. And then you've got to try and guess what word it is. Anyway, it's like you just do it every day, do it before going to bed. If I'm like fresh and I'm not tired, it takes me like 2 goes, maybe 3, and no time at all. If I'm tired, I'll be sat there and like till like 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock being like, I have to do it, time's out and I can't do it. So like, I'd say my, like, if I was to like plot it, I'd say my relation, like the relationship between like my work and success and training, training load is definitely
correlated.
Yeah.
Wait, but why do you do this? Why do you play this game? Like, I just watch Netflix before I go to bed. Why are you playing this brain game?
Because it's addictive and you get hooked on it. Same with like my Spanish. I have to do Duolingo. What have I got? 762 day streak on Duolingo.
Oh my God. Jan Mas told me he had a streak like that as well. It's like 2 or 3 years or something like that. I'm like, you haven't broken that streak in that long? Yours is longer. His was like 600 and something. Wait, yeah, 700 and what?
762, I think it was. It was like,
and you're just not fluent yet?
No, I'm just really good at Duolingo. It's like a game.
Okay.
But what's actually, it's made me do, so I can speak Spanish pretty well. I can read it and I certainly can write it, but I can't understand it because I don't speak to people enough in Spanish. So I'll like go into a shop or a pharmacy or something and I'll be like, blah, 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 Spanish. And then they'll speak to me and I'll be like, I can't speak Spanish. And then they're like, what? you're just stupid.
Okay. So what was, because you got into cycling later, like when, what was you, how did you get into cycling, or what was your background before getting into it?
Mostly I just really hated bikes when I was younger. I hated cycling. I did it because my family were really into it. So yeah, my family have all been really into bikes forever. And it's like as kids, we did a lot of riding, like mountain biking. And then like when I was a teenager, I'd do, because that was like the family holiday. But it was before like we really learned about like nutrition and things like that. So we'd still on the family, like still go out and ride like 150 kilometers, but you take like one water bottle and a banana. And then I'd have a really shit day and be like, well, I don't know why. And so I just didn't like it really. And then I was really into running, and I played netball and just did other sports. Like that was more what I was interested in. And then it was really weird. It literally just like changed overnight. I stopped being able to run, and my dad was like, oh, come away on a like club cycling trip. And so I was like, okay. So I did a couple of rides to like get fit. And then I went and then was like really good. And kind of was like, oh, really into this. And then like went home at the end of the trip, like bought a TT bike off eBay, and then went to like the local evening TTs. Cause in the UK, like they are obsessed with time trials, and you can do a TT like every single evening of the week between like April and October, you could do a TT within like 20 kilometers of the house.
So and this is where you met Dan.
Well, pretty much, but he came later. But like, this was the world. I entered into the world of Dan. Basically, I did a TT and was like good. So then I just got into it, got onto a team, and then it just went that really. Yeah.
Wait, but so how old were you when you got into the TTs then, when you bought the TT bike?
That was 2016. So, was that 2016? I think so. What are we now? 2024. Okay. So like 8 years ago. 28? Yeah. So I was like 28, 27, 28. Yeah. So I got into racing late. I'd done like sportifs forever, and I still really rate sportif. I'd love to go and do one. But actually I did quite a funny one. It was one in Italy. It's called the Gran Fondo di Pinerello. So this Pinerello out of like Pinerello store in Treviso. And there's like a pro race, and then there's like the sportif. And I went, and this was one of the beginning of like me beginning to realize that maybe I was like better than just average. And I was in the like sportif, and I was like riding along, and there's this really amazing climb, like San Baldo, and it's like hundreds of hairpins. You go through all these tunnels. And as I was riding up, there was like this motorbike started following me with a camera. And I was like, oh, that's kind of weird. And I got to the top, and there's like a food stop. So I stop and I go and get like some fig rolls and a sandwich, and I sit down to like wait for my sister and my friend. and the camera's like right in my face, and I'm like, going on. And they were like, you're like the second woman in the race. I was like, oh, no, I'm just here for the lols. I was like, I'm not racing. And they were like, oh, bonus, bonus. And so that was like, that was before I got into it. But when my dad and my brother were like, you should race, race. And so, yeah, I guess I eventually did.
That's awesome. But how much better are the sportifs than like real road racing? It's so much more fun. Like the courses, everything is so relaxed. Everybody is so nice.
And it's but you go crazy, crazy hard still. And you can like ride cripple climbs like mad. And then you have these like incredible like sections where everybody's like rolling through and it's like the most important thing. But then you stop and get like a beer.
Yeah.
That's fun.
I think it's so cool because they're so like laid back and you do the coolest courses. They have like the most ridiculous routes and stuff that you can do it. And it's like, it's so cool for that. The part that I really wonder how they get insurance for some of these, because you see some of the people where it's like they're super fit and they're super strong, but the bike handling skills are not there. And then you see some guys bombing down the passes and they're super tucking and they're going around the corners like a boat. And you're just like, buddy, I don't know if your skills are keeping up with this right now. Like maybe you should not go full Chris Froome right now.
Yeah, because it's full commit as well, because it is the most important thing. Like at that
it's the world's, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, so that was, I suppose, my racing experience up till when I started doing these like TTs and hill climbs and things like that. But then, yeah, I got on a team and got into the road racing. And the first few years was actually just a series of just like a lot of really bad crashes. It seemed to be like, it felt, everyone was like, oh, you crash all the time. And I'm like, I don't. It's just when I do it, it's really bad. Yeah, I just had a couple of really bad ones, which then was a bit hard to like get over. But then once I kind of got over it, and then I had a year where it was probably like 2021. Yeah, must have been after COVID, where I just did a lot of racing. And like, I think that's just the absolute best thing to do, is just race loads and loads and do stage races. And because there's nothing quite like stage racing to like your head in it. Like, it's the same coming back after pregnancy. Like, I had... The first race back was in Mallorca, and it was Bambi. I was genuinely like scared to drink in the peloton, like, because I've just been riding on my own for a year and a half, basically. And then suddenly you're like flying down these like mountains by other people. But then I did like 4 days in Valencia. And by the end of that, you're like, oh, kind of back into it. So yeah,
it comes back quick.
Yeah, comfortable like quickly. But I've just had this race in Normandy, and it was like pretty crazy weather, and I quite like racing in the rain and the wind, like, don't know, to me, like, the harder the race, the better it is. So if it's like nuts, it's just better. And it was like that, and a couple of girls on the team, it was like the first race of the season, and I was like, I wouldn't have even got out of neutral if that had been me in January. Like, no way.
Okay, but I mean, you've had some, I can guess which one, just like off the results and stuff, but what's like the highlight of your career, the most proud moment, like the most excited moment of your career that you've been? What's the best, the peak moment so far?
Best?
Just like joy, accomplishment.
Oh, wow. I don't know, it's hard to say, it's never too successful. People have said, so I'm always like, no, you can always do more. What was good? I don't know. What was I pleased with? Sounds weird. There was the women's tour. So women's tour of Britain was in the UK. I was second in the TT stage. Like it was just a stage in a race. But when you perform pretty well at like your home race, when you've got like all the crowds are there like supporting you, that's a pretty nice feeling. Like that makes you feel pretty good. I enjoyed that. I really enjoyed the result. Like we won Tour de Feminine, this stage race in Czech Republic. I won GC, but it was absolutely like the team won without a doubt. And that was a really, really nice feeling, because everybody felt massively like they really, really contributed. And because it was like, we had this plan on the last day, and it was like there was like this three laps of this really like hilly circuit, and the DS had been like at the beginning of the second lap, we're just going to line it right out, like full lead out into this like really steep climb, and then I was supposed to just launch it and ride off and just win. And we were talking about it.
That's a great strategy.
And I was like, I just don't buy into this at all. But you know what it's like, this is the plan, you buy into it. And I was like, and so we went up this climb the first time. And I was like, everyone is really strong. Like, I can't ride up this climb and ride it away. So as we were like coming around the lap, I went up to like one of the girls, Alice, and I was like, I think we should do the plan. And she was like, okay, 1 second. So she was like, went away for a bit. And then she came back and she was like, I've just spoken to Nico, the DS. She was like, we have to do the plan. And I was like, no, she was like, no, he said, you better like can do the plan. So I was like, oh God. Okay. So then it was like full lead out, get organized quickly because now we're running out of road. So then it was like this full lead out, and then it went. And then luckily I got away and then rode off and we won. And it was like the plan. But like I was ready to like absolutely not do it. Like no way. the team was really happy. And that's cool too. That's a good feeling.
That's awesome. I mean,
did you think then?
Well, I was going to go with either that, Eighth at the Worlds, or the hour record.
Yeah, Eighth at the Worlds was good, except I really blew up and I felt like I probably should have been late for it. So that was a bit of a... And then the hour, to be honest, it was actually like a pretty bad ride. it wasn't the best preparation for it because it was like straight after Worlds where I'd done TTT and road race, and I was just really, really tired. And kind of what happens is like you can ride in sweet spot all day when you're like deep, but you can't really ride like anything like threshold or anything above. And so I did like an average ride and just kind of got away with it.
Okay, how was the how was okay? So obviously you had all these races, but they're the effort with all these different time trials, it's quite similar training, I would guess, or maybe yeah. I'm completely wrong. How is the training, like the prep for the hour record? How is the preparation for the hour record? How is that different from the normal training of a pro road cyclist?
So when we first set it out to do it, I was going to do it in January, February time, I think it was. And it wasn't going to be an official world record. I was just going to do like a British one, because to do the official one, you've got to be like on the doping passport. It costs loads of money. It's like a really big thing. And at that time, I wasn't set up for it. So we were like, we'll just do a British one. And then, so I was prepping for that. And that's when I was training like properly for it. And this was like the best shape I've ever been in. So I was, because this is also like kind of this beginning of 21, the back end of 2020, beginning of 21. So it's still kind of like some weird lockdown things. And in the UK, we were pretty restricted in like January 21. So I was doing a lot of training on the turbo, basically the track and the turbo. And the turbo session, I was doing like endurance on the turbo. So still like 4 or 5 hours and all in TT position and lots of like long efforts, so like 20, 30, 40 minute effort. And a lot of heat training on the turbos. We had like an altitude tent, but we set it up as just like a heat tent instead. So I was doing like, I'd maybe go to the track and train on the velodrome and then come back and do like heat in the tent afterwards. And I was like absolutely flying at time in the year when there is no races. But it's January and I thought I was doing this hour record, but then because of all the restrictions and everything, I had to do an official attempt. So we just did like a practice one and I kind of unofficially broke the world record. But it was like a really good ride and like power wise, like yeah, it was really like really decent. But then when I came to actually doing the real thing, trying to do that at the kind of the back end really of the road season, whilst racing, because training when racing is really, really hard. Like it was okay, but it wasn't as good a preparation and as good a training as when I did it, like my practice run. And I think I was like maybe 15 watts less or something like that. Which like when you put out your watts, 15 watts doesn't make much difference, but my watts.
Okay. But Okay, so here's actually a really interesting question, and you're probably the best person to ask about this because you've done both. The hour record, it's such a cool thing, but like the barrier to get into it is so hard. Like I have no idea how much it costs to do it. I've only heard just like insane numbers, how much it costs. Like it's just the logistical part of it is insane. What about like how, maybe I'm living in La La Land and you can tell me if I am, but like what about just like if somebody wanted to go for the hour record, train for it, get the track time, practice, do all this kind of stuff, do the best you can to prepare for it. And then on the day you want to do it, just like pick a random day you're going to do it, get a bunch of your friends to help you out with all the other support that has to go around, borrow the really fast track equipment if you have to, like set it up as much as you can as your TT bike, go do it, film it, put it on YouTube. Okay, fine. It's not the official record. Nobody's going to care. If you break the world record and you just put it on YouTube and be like, oh, well, sorry, it's not the official UCI record, people are still going to be stoked. Or yeah. Am I living in La La Land? Like, is that not real?
People will be stoked, but and they will 100%. People just maybe won't believe it. You actually, but you put out your date in the file or something. But that is essentially almost like what happened with my practice. So I did this practice run, and then we put out like this file. Like there was like a little Instagram post being like, "Oh, I just casually just like broke the world record." And although it wasn't official, what it actually did was make then. I got the backing to go and do the official one, and Nicole were like, oh, actually, you just did that. Oh, you can break the world record. And so then they, like, yeah, fully backed it and went and made it, like, official. So, I think if you think that you can do it, then you should do it. Actually, you know, like, Dan's company, Watch Shop, so they put on, like, they did it this, in September, I think it was, and it was, like, Watch Shop's week of hour records or something like that. So like people from different countries could go after like an age group record. So it's like, because you can do like your own country world record or your like age group record, and that doesn't have to be like you don't have to be on like the doping passport, and you don't have like this like restrictions to go after like those records. And so then like Watch Up organized it all, and then a lot of people went and broke some records. So you could go and do something.
That'd be cool, actually. And well, yeah, because I was just thinking, like, to get on the doping passport thing, it's like, yeah, if you don't have it, if you're not already on it, to get on it for the hour record, I imagine would be really expensive. But like, I've been on the doping passport since I was like under 23 or whatever, since I was like 21 years old or something like that. Like, a lot of Conti riders are on it for whatever. You race the worlds for something like that. So that's covered. If you were to like just rent the track time, film it, put it on YouTube, like, and then like I was thinking like, okay, what about for like, people are going to say like, oh, it's not real. Like, what if the bike wasn't legal or something? Like, well, maybe I could just find like a buddy that's a UCI commissaire and be like, hey man, like, I know you're not official, you're not working, but can you just like stand in the video and like pretend to do the job for it here? Like, you know, you try to make it as official as you can. And I think a lot of people would actually get behind that because it's like,
well, yeah, people want. Most people just like people doing like really cool stuff and doing it well and doing it hard. And it's like, that's what you want to see. And then you get some people that will be like, official. Be like,
yeah, well, okay, you go do it then.
Also, but I do think that if you actually did it, if you went and broke it, then 100% you'd have people being like, nah, I want to make this official.
That's really cool. So wait, okay, tell me about this Watch Shop thing. Well, what is it? The hour record week? Because I know I've seen it on Instagram, but I didn't actually know what it was.
Yeah, so like they go, it's actually my brother works for Watch Shop now. So he basically organized it. They book the track. They organize like the commissaires, the the track officials, the timing, like organize the whole event. And they do they had a guy, I think, from America was maybe there, a guy from the UK who was going after his age group one, a French guy. You should know this, but like a handful of athletes who were all trying to break whatever, whether it was like a national record or like an age group record. And they just put the event on board and they took them out there. They did a load of error testing with them beforehand to try and help them out as much as possible. And yeah, they went and broke some records.
That's really cool. How different is, aside from like being a track bike compared to a TT bike, how different was your setup for the hour record bike compared to your time trial bike? Like, was the position different? Was there like different crank lengths or anything like that? Like, was the bike the same or different?
At the time, because I feel like there's almost like two answers. Like, at the time, it wasn't really that different actually in terms of the position. And I did, like, when I was doing all that training on my TT bike on the turbo and stuff, it was on my track bike. I had literally a thick skin on Le Mans, and I trained on that like that. But if I was to do it again, I think there'd be a lot of, probably like a fair amount of differences between the position and not so much the equipment, maybe some differences, like probably like crank length, probably go shorter cranks on my track bike. What else would I do differently now? But yeah, at the time it wasn't really that different.
So if you were to do it now, you would have a different position on the track bike for the hour record compared to your TT bike?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd probably try some different things. I think it wasn't like I could really see really well, but I probably would be even less concerned about how I, like, my vision, essentially,
okay,
on the track. So I think it can definitely take a more aggressive position on the track. And no, it'd be differently. Yeah. I think it would be interesting to do some testing. Maybe stacked out would be a little bit different. I don't know. I would test some things.
Interesting. Huh. That's cool. And the prep before, it was just a lot of time, like long efforts on the aero position. You're doing like 4 or 5 hour rides. Everything was on the trainer, or pretty much everything was on the trainer.
At the time, yeah, I was doing I would either be on the track. This was in the winter. So I actually did the record in I did all my really good prep in the winter, and then I kind of dip back into it in the summer. So I think in the summer, I'm building into it. A lot more of my training was on the TT bike outside and much less on track bike. But when I was kind of prepping for the actual decent effort, yeah, I was always on my track bike, whether it was on the track or on the turbo. And yeah, all my hours in TT position. Even now, if I'm training on the turbo, I'll always train on my TT bike. I find it way more comfortable. And you can put your elbows in the armrests and your head in your hands, and you just kind of tap along like this. And it's just, I just find it a much more comfortable way to train.
Interesting. Okay. This is a really nerdy question, but the idea of inertia on the trainer, were you replicating the same speeds on the trainer that you would be doing on the track?
Pretty much. It was a fixed gear, because I'm using this Le Mans trainer, and obviously it was my track bike. I didn't have a gear, and so essentially, you just set it up so. So that you'd be riding the same, basically the same gear, the same cadence, because that would depend on what power I was doing. But yeah, basically the same feel to riding outside, riding on the track even.
Interesting.
It's really smooth. That's another reason why I train now on this Le Mans turbo, because it's really a really natural feeling riding on the road. Whereas I find the smart trainers are just really nice, they're just artificial.
What is the Le Mans trainer? Is it an old trainer then?
Yeah, it's this really old, it's called it's a dumb trainer. It's just dumb this.
Is it the one with the fan?
Yeah, it's a massive fan. Really, really loud.
Okay. And do they even make these anymore?
I don't think they make them anymore. And I think that maybe they're pretty limited stock, and I'm pretty sure that the big and loud and household owners. I think they're pretty, they're pretty difficult to get hold of, but they're really, really nice. They're really sweet. They weigh 35 kilos or something. So, they're massive, but I'm really loud. It's great though. Cause they're Theo, that baby, babies really respond to white noise, really well. It's really calming and soothing. And so
you have a jet in your living room.
It's so loud. And so when he has the best naps when one of us is on the turbo, it's just solid. And sometimes if he's been a bit tricky, you put him down and I'll go in, I'll be like, how long have you got left? And Dan will be 10 minutes. And I'm no, you're going to need to going to have to just keep going. He's I've done 4 hours. No, you just keep going. I'm afraid. Keep sleeping. Keep it going.
That's funny. Have you ever played, just because like you focus so much on the time trial and like that's obviously where you've had so much of your success, have you ever played around with oval chain rings?
I have actually not ever tried it. I've just never believed that there was like a need for me. But I've never tried, so I couldn't say anything like positive or negative about it.
Okay, just a random question. Has there been like rock bottom of your career? Has there been like a really hard moment of it?
Yeah, the worst, if we'd filmed this like 2 weeks ago, I probably would have been like, right now, I'm Dutch. But the worst was, it was in 2018, I think. I'd basically taken a sabbatical from work, trained all winter. I'd gone to Spain, trained really hard, and then got racing and was doing the Tour of Yorkshire, UCI racing in the UK. And I was hit by one of the motorbikes and like they literally skid in some mud, swapped across the road, took me out, and I like broke my shoulder like everywhere. And it just didn't heal, basically. So the bones didn't like knit back together. And because it continued to like bleed underneath the surface, it was like I had basically like low grade flu for like 3 months. And I just felt like I couldn't do anything. I just felt really, really horrific. And then it was like finally in like October, I think it was. That was in May. And then in October, I had like a bone graft and a load more surgery to like fix it. But like that summer, that was really low because I couldn't work, because I couldn't do anything because it was like I had flu. Like genuinely like sick. And then I couldn't ride. I just couldn't ride. I couldn't just couldn't think. That was like
rubbish. The flu was from the bone?
It was like that. So it was like, you know, when you have flu and you're like, you're sick and you have like a fever and you have a cold and you have all those symptoms. I just had that like on and off, like every other week, because I had so much bruising and there's all this bleeding under the skin, like your body's like really trying to fight it. Like to clear, but it was like I was just ill for months. That was pretty low. And then after that, I was just pretty scared of riding my bike. So then trying to get back into racing was really hard because I was like, I don't want to do it. I hate it. But then I didn't not want to not do it either. I just like really wanted to do it, but I was hating it at the same time. That was all quite low.
But so 2018, so you're just starting, like you're really early in your cycling career.
And so I'd raced still through 2017, and then this was 2018, really.
And it's like the first time taking a break from work to go all in on the cycling thing to try it.
Yeah.
You trained super hard all winter. And then when was Yorkshire then? When was the crash? Like what month of the year?
Like 3rd of May or something like that. May.
So early in the year. Did you get back to racing that year at all? Like in the fall? Or
I did a couple of TTs badly in like August. I thought it was getting better. So I did like a bit of riding and like the TTs, but it wasn't really better. And then in the October, I had more surgery. So that was it. It was just like, no, I didn't really, like really that year.
It basically just writes off the season there.
Writes off the season. And then I sort of went into 2019, just went to like, a quantity when I was like, I don't even know if I want to be doing. But then was like did some races and like one sort of rode off, and then the UCI team was like, come race for us, like we're going to California next week, we want you to come. Thing, okay, so I just like went and went for them, although actually then crashed and broke my elbow, but then I carried on racing for them and then it was good.
Oh, that's amazing. Okay, but backing up, like 2018, like you kind of did you think about quitting the sport at all then? Like if it's taking that long to get back from recovery, like that's a horrible crash to go through. It's like you're really early in the career.
I think I just thought, I still want to race and I still want to do it. But I'll just do it at like a domestic level. Maybe I'll just do it and just do a bit of racing, race for fun. Because like you've got to remember as well, like the women's professional scene, whilst it like obviously has existed for a long time, it's not the same as it is. And it's definitely not the same as what the men's was like then either. there's so, so many more opportunities to race at a high level. There's so much more support. Obviously, there's like salary and everything like that now. But back then, it wasn't quite as much. And I know this is only like really just a few years ago, but the domestic scene was almost like what I just thought, oh, that's racing. Like, I just didn't really almost like believe that there was this like world scene that I could be part of. I was just a bit like, oh, yeah, I'll just race domestically. Like, that's normal. That's fine. That's like, you're still cycling. And once you kind of like then step up and then you're racing at this world level and it started to like grow and grow and grow, I feel like my motivation and like determination to be at like the world level has kind of grown with me as I've kind of got into it more and more and more. Like, I always think when I was a kid, I always wanted to be a professional athlete, but it wasn't a professional cyclist. I wasn't wanting to be like a professional runner or like netball player or like anything, just a professional athlete. And it's like the cycling thing came. I just didn't really think it would exist for me. I just didn't really believe it. And then as I've kind of gone each year through it and raced more and more in the like professional scene for women has grown more and more. I guess it's become like, yeah, more and more a place that I actually want to be, but it wasn't something that I really sought out.
See, 2018, like by the end of that, like it's just getting healthy again. You go into the winter, it's like, okay, I just want to race domestically. 2019, you start racing domestically, start killing it. Team calls you, let's go to California.
Yep. And then that was like, that was the beginning of like, racing, I suppose, like internationally, and yeah, racing through that summer. And then it sort of just kind of went from there. And then I guess the big turning point really was in 2021. I had like a pretty good season. And I suppose that was the year I was going to do my hour, like good season sort of on the road. And that was when Uno X team set up, because I was quite happy at my team. I was still working. I really liked working. Like, I like my brain being busy, and I so I was working like data analytics. I enjoyed it. But you know, I was like, no, you're going to come ride for us. You are 100% a professional cyclist. You're not going to work and do everything else as well. And so that was like the full jump in. It's been really cool because I like being part of a team that's kind of like growing and developing. And being part of like that kind of like journey, and because it was a new team and sort of like you find your feet and you're kind of learning about each other all the time, like staff and teammates, and it's just like a pretty cool like environment to be in. And that's where we are now.
Okay, well, because I was going to ask, like 21 and 22, that's like you have so many awesome results from there. Like that's where it's like clearly the massive step up. What was the difference for going into 21? Is that just when you really became like a full-time pro?
Yeah, I just trained really well through the winter, like in 21. I think that was just it. Like, yeah, training was good. And then confidence on the bike was just much better. I had really good teammates around me and stuff. Like, there was one race, Brabantsepil, I think I was, and I had this teammate, Sarah Penton. And she'd literally just come up to me and be like, I think we should go to the front now because I think the brake's going to go. And I was like, okay. And then we just go to the front and then like literally just ride straight into the brake and then you're just away. And she was just like that. And that's what the racing was like. Like you have this way, I think that like results, like you could be the person that crosses the line or something, but so often there's like the people, the teammates, the plan from the car, whatever that has put you there. I'm definitely someone that I like to have sort of like coaching from other people and the ideas and that like kind of do as I'm told if I'm like strong enough and so they had like really good teammates around me and it just made it like that was just a good year, and hopefully this one will be even better.
Yeah, sure. Is there anything that you changed for this year, like just looking back on like the past years, things 100%. You want to change?
Yeah, more carbs.
More carbs. More yeah. carbs.
More carbs. Like I've definitely been caught out way too many times in racing and training by just not eating enough, like not fueling well enough. Like just I just really don't like the taste of really sugary food. It's just, I don't like it. So it's like I have to really force myself to eat it, basically. And yeah, it's just like I got a bit caught out by it, but I got better. And now I'm like, what do I actually prefer? Like, I hate gels, but I also really hate like blowing out the back of a race. So let's just eat the gel. Yeah, fueling, like really good fueling for training as well, is a really big difference. Like, I guess I used to think, yeah, okay, so you race at like 80, 90 grams of carbs an hour, 100 grams of carbs an hour or something. But training, oh, you just need like 30. And like now I'm like, you need like, there's some days where you need like 80, 90 an hour still. Yeah, I just really noticed the difference in how I feel in my training as well. I would say. Any like 100% just bulk ups.
Okay. And maybe this is partially because you're living with the mad scientist, but like, do you do anything to track all of this stuff or is it just normal?
Yeah, I mean, certainly, I mean, we track a lot of stuff and just with my team, like with the nutritionist and my coach, like, yeah, we track, I basically report back after every training session, like carbs that I've eaten when I've been training and yeah, and absolutely like, don't eat enough and what it does to you and how crap you feel. And I think also like coming back up in pregnancy, like I am a few kilos heavier, but like definitely at this time of year for sure, it's way better to be really well fueled and not stress about the few kilos than it is to like try and lose them at some point. And yeah, better to sort of have all the energy than to stress too much about weight. I guess that's something that's been changed a bit.
Okay. Do you have any sort of system for like keeping track of all this stuff? Like, do you use an app or do you track it somehow? Or do you weigh out all your food at the food scale or?
I race. So when we race, we weigh everything. Mm-hmm. We get like a nutrition plan, like grams of carbs you need to be eating each meal. And then I'll weigh it, but I don't weigh anything at home for meals. If I'm cooking pasta or rice, I kind of weigh it out. We cook like roughly now, but I'm not like meticulous about details. It's much more just about my training. So like the training, I know exactly how many grams I'm per hour, but like for general food, just eat quite a lot.
Okay. Yeah. Interesting. And just, I'm in the same boat as you were, like, I don't like eating as much. Like it's work for me to eat enough carbs during training and stuff like that. And like, cause you just get sick of it. Like you've eaten every kind of Haribo, every kind of gel, all the stuff. It just doesn't taste good. Like the one that I'm on right now that like, and again, I'll probably get bored of this in a few months and have to come up with something new. But the one that I just go buy like sugar from the grocery store and just fill up an old protein powder jug for it. So I just have like this giant jug of sugar.
Drink maple syrup.
Yeah, I still do that. That's good too. Yeah, but that can get expensive when you drink. Like, maple syrup's not cheap in Europe. Like
maple syrup's not cheap.
Yeah, and especially at the amount I drink. But yeah. Maple syrup's great. That's like more like a treat, though. And you really want like a really good trick? Maple syrup with an espresso shot? Oh, Canadiano. It's really good.
What is
good.
It they drink?
It's rocket.
Like the youngsters are really into those cafe bonbons, which is like espresso with condensed milk.
Condensed milk is like
it's just like sugary milky syrup sort of thing.
Okay.
And it looks like a mini Guinness, and so you have like the espresso shot with this like layer of like creamy sugary syrupy stuff on top, and it's like rocket fuel. And like all the youngsters like in Spain just go nuts from like on their rest day, they go and like slam like three really good if like to get like you going for like some efforts.
Okay, I don't know what those are, but there was like, I was at one training camp with some friends and I was just saying to the one guy at the breakfast table one time, because we're like really deep into this training block, and I just looked down and I'm like, Emu, I need something more than coffee but less than cocaine. And he's like, oh, I have the thing for you. He comes back with, do you know what pocket coffee is?
No.
So it's like these chocolates. It's made by the company that makes the Ferrero Rocher chocolates. They're dark chocolates and they have an espresso shot in the middle. So it's like dark chocolate with espresso in the middle. It's awesome. And like you pop, like you're doing efforts, you can pop these things like Tic Tacs between efforts.
These we have them. They're like chocolate coated coffee beans. I go pretty nuts for them. I used to eat them before I did like these hill climb races because I was like, sugar, caffeine, why not? Like crunch release chocolate bean kind of thing. Oh, they're good.
Yeah, that's something you could leave at like a kid's birthday party, like with all the chocolates and stuff, as like a prank.
Oh my god.
What was the prep going in for Worlds? Like, was it a big goal from a ways out? Like, the result, of course, was amazing. What was the prep like going into it?
So I guess, like, I was going into a really busy time of the year. It was like, yeah, the Worlds with TTT road race. And then, like, 6 days later, our record. And then 3 days later, women's tour. And then, like, 5 days later, nationals. So it was, like, this really big block. So, I think the prep in for it was, I didn't go to Tijuana Road. I can't remember what I was like really doing in terms of where I was, but it was, like spend as much time as I could on my TT bike, basically. I wasn't going to get onto the track. I think I did like 2 track sessions. So it was much more about like time on the TT bike. Really as much as possible. And obviously like trying to like fit it in amongst like a race calendar. For me, like I can do, like I quite like them really long efforts, and can do like quite a lot of them like repeatedly. But actually, what I kind of like have realized now, and I'll do differently, like I don't really train in the same way now. Like I was really good at doing like 40-minute efforts or 3-minute efforts, and like you know,
how many 40-minute efforts would you do in a session?
3, 4. Like sometimes my sessions were crazy. Remember once I got given, I had to go and do, this was nuts. So my coach was Sean Yates. This was like, he was like.
Yeah, he's a pretty moderate guy.
He's, pretty like unbelievable, really. And I had this one session and it was like 2 by 40 minutes or something at like threshold. And then on one climb. And then ride to another climb and then do like 2 by 1 hour at threshold or something. And I was like, this is just not possible. I can't do this. And he was like, try. And I was like, oh, we have to do this. And he was like, you have to try. I want you to try and you want, like, you have to fail. And I'm like, I don't want to fail. And so it's like, it's just like the most hideous, basically, like, day of suffering because you're just like battling to just try and do it. And obviously, you're just below threshold, but you're just going to like do everything you possibly can to try and do it. So yeah, I had sessions like that. But I wouldn't train like that now, I don't think. We do a lot more like short stuff. So like when I was pregnant, I did loads of really short intervals. Like I didn't
Short intervals. Okay.
Yeah, yeah, like 1 minute, 40 seconds, 20 seconds. Like I was doing the gym work. So I was like, it would either be like really short and hard or like long enduring, but they didn't really do anything in the middle. And basically, I came out of that and, like, my kick and acceleration is, like, a lot better than it used to be. And actually, for, like, road racing and the sort of, like, yeah, racing that we do, and actually even for time trials, it's much better to be able to have that, like, change in pace and to be able to do the, like, the on-off, on-off efforts than just this, like, long duration hold and pull. But that was what I was doing back then. But I think... I think now how I'm training is really, kind of get more out of it.
What do you mean you get more out of your training now?
Yeah, I think like I'll probably end up being better because of how I train now than I was like then.
With more shorter efforts.
Yeah, with more shorter efforts, more like mixed pace than just like, I just did loads and loads of like 30 minutes, 30 minutes, 20 minutes, which I think was like, really good for like the hour preparation, but it's not really great for like road racing, not with women's race really, and not even that much for TTs because it's just like, you know, most of them are like crit.
Okay, all right. So last question then: what are the 3 workouts you do the most then?
So obviously like that LSD long slow down road. So just like the long like duration sort of endurance ride. And then like short ones, pretty much like most sessions I'll have sprints in, whether it's like at the start or at the end. And my coach is really keen on putting really hard, like almost maximal effort at the end of my training, because I think it's his way of being like, you won't be able to do this unless you eat like 8 grams of carbs an hour, so you best do it. And so kind of puts in these really hard efforts after like 3-4 hours. I think like things like I used to do, I haven't done that much this year, but like the 2040s. But yeah, like mixed pace. I do quite a lot of mixed pace. And then gym work.
How much time do you spend in the gym?
Ideally, it's like 2 times a week, really.
Okay. And which exercises do you do?
So I do like some split leg squat weight, squats with a dumbbell and leg press. Some of these dead bugs you have to take away in your head, but that's also because like after you have a baby, your paw's a bit weak. So I'm really into it. Like when in the summer, just after having it, I had to do it without any weight. And it's like pretty satisfying because always like get stronger and stronger. But nice to see. Yeah. So gym is, gym. What else do I do? Oh, that like, what's it called? Like Hungarian or like deadlift, you know, you stand on my
Bulgarian split squats.
Do that one.
Okay. Cool. And do you do it before or after you go on the bike?
Always after. I like to do morning riding and then gym in the evening. And like, it's not because I think it's better. It's just how I like to do my day. Like,
okay.
Yeah. I know some people that like to do the other way around. Gym time for me is also like, I like the kind of headspace of going to the gym and just put headphones on and music or podcast or whatever, audiobook, and you just kind of like in your own place. And it's quite like a nice way to like round down the day.